This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 19, Episode 22. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on worldbuilding, technology, and identity.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard. And we are talking about A Memory Called Empire. During this close read, we're exploring the technology of identity and how identity enters into the story and how these things, most importantly, really, will enter into your own work. And I would like to lead with one of my favorite moments in the book. Going to paraphrase a little bit and then read a line. They're talking about the Imago technology from Lizelle Station, where someone else's memories, multiple generations of someone else's, can be embedded in you. And you have these people, these identities as voices in your head, for lack of a better term. Someone asks the protagonist, Mahit, are you Iskander or are you Mahit? And after a bit of navel gazing, Mahit says, how wide is the Texcalanli concept of you? I love that question. Ask yourself, fair listener, how wide is your concept of yourself? How wide is your concept of another person as an individual? Because when we start talking about technological modifications to our minds, and it is entirely possible that you are holding an early generation of one of those in the form of your smartphone, the question of what do we mean by you? What do I mean by me? Becomes super fun to explore. And Arkady Martin does a brilliant job of it. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just briefly pause because I realize that we've been so embedded in this book that we actually are using imago as if it's an everyday term. And imago is basically, it's a small machine that nestles in the base of a person's head, and it carries the memory of their predecessor, and the some of that memory is personality, and they're matched with someone who has a similar personality. And the idea is that it's like having a mentor that just goes with you everywhere. And one of the things that I love about this idea of you that you're talking about is that they have very clear ideas of what an appropriate use of this technology is. Mm-hmm. That you are trying, that the people who pick someone to be added to this imago line, so you may have like 14 generations of people giving you their advice and wisdom, but each one becomes that they integrate. They spend a year integrating so that they're working well together. They're carefully selected so that they have similar personalities. And there are also these very clear ideas of what is appropriate use for this and what is taboo or gross. And it is a lovely piece of world building, because the other thing that happens is that then we see what the Texcalani reaction, mm-hmm, to the imago is, that they find it quite appalling that you would modify yourself in any way, shape, or form. But then their ideas of what to do with it are in turn appalling to the
people of LaSalle.
Yeah, LaSalle.
I think it's been pretty clear my lens on reading this book has come up over the course of this close reading series has been one where I'm really thinking about this in terms of empire and immigration and assimilation, right? And one of the things I love about the idea of the imago is It is about generational knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's about a connection to your ancestors. And on LaSalle, that's literalized, right?
Yeah.
The things you learn from the people who came before you is literally embedded in your body, right? Mm-hmm. And what we see in this book is Mahit arrives at the heart of the empire, immediately is severed from that ancestral knowledge through a traumatic event. Like, literally, we have generational trauma happen inside her head, and then she loses access to the knowledge of the her forebears. And it just is this really rich metaphor of, you know, the knowledge that we carry with us, the knowledge that comes from our predecessors, what happens when we don't have access to that inside the heart of an empire that wants to erase us and is horrified by the idea that you would carry that with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a memory called empire, but the thing is that because the empire wants to erase your memory, it wants to erase the memory that connects you to your own people and to your own culture. And all of that is embedded in this idea of this technology. So how expansive is the definition of you? Does it include your ancestors, or is it just you, the person who is here now? And boy, would Texcalon like to say that it's just you that's here now.
Yeah. And what I love about this is all of this has to, what Arkady Martin has to do is establish what this is really early mm-hmm. on, before the trauma happens, before all the reaction to it happens. I think we need to feel sympathetic towards its existence, that Imago is generally good, that we're sort of on the side of Mahit having this. And I was thinking about sort of some lines really early on. I'm not going to read them, but the very beginning, they're making their way through the city and Three Seagrass starts like whispering a poem. And right. then like in the back of Mahit's mind, Iskander's also like the Imago voice mm-hmm. is also whispering the poem and she finds it really reassuring. Mm-hmm. And I think what is great about that is we've all been out of place at some point in our lives, right? So this is a completely like a world we don't know. But it centers us in an experience that we're familiar with. We're mm-hmm. out of place. We're looking for something that will make us feel comfortable. And in this case, it's this voice in the back of her head. It's this memory, this generational memory that makes Mahit feel comfortable. And I think that makes us feel this is a comforting thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Getting this ripped away is going to be bad, is going to be traumatic. Mm-hmm. And the ability to do that world building really early on, I think is just one of the really great strengths of this.
There are two other technologies that enter into this discussion. The first of those two is, for me, the obvious symmetry, the cloud hook that the Texcalani use. And when I think from my utter outsider standpoint of how the Texcalani react to the Imago technology, I look at the cloud hook and think, you hypocrites.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the cloud hook is not a voice in your head, I don't know what else is. It's like if your smartphone had an AI in it and knew the kinds of things that you always needed to look for and presented you with that information. Oh, wait, that already happens.
Yeah.
Well, and the AI is explicitly malfunctioning, right? It's explicitly attacking people or marking people as inappropriate who theoretically aren't, yeah. who haven't yeah. done anything that violates.
And that's the second piece of the mm-hmm. technology, which is the fact that the city itself has AI, or at least algorithmic intelligence mimicry going on in it, which has biases. And as we find out during the story, some of those biases are perhaps a little more deliberate and a little more malicious than perhaps they mm-hmm. should be. When I think of the cloud hook, I am reminded of a change that I have seen in my lifetime, which I can sum up in the question, who was that one guy in that one movie?
Yeah.
We do not have that argument anymore. I mean, unless we explicitly lay down rules and say, no, don't pick up your phone. Where have we seen that actor before? Not the main actor, the character actor. Yeah, guy who just died. Kim, who's that?
Yeah.
But now Sandra and I do this all the time, and we'll pick up our phones.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment we get the answer, the other movie comes flooding back to us, or the other movies, or TV mm-hmm. series, or whatever. Our phones have already changed who we are in that they have changed the sorts of information that we have readily available to us.
Mm-hmm.
In this story, the way the cloud hook, we have people severed from their cloud hooks, people severed from their imagos, mm-hmm. and looking at the way they cope is plot important. And it's handled much more effectively than all of those movie scenes where somebody holds their phone up and say, oh no, I have no right. bars.
Well, and it's also the cloud hook is connected to citizenship, right? The way that Imago is Mahit's connection to her people, the cloud hook says you are or are not a citizen with mm-hmm. it. And only citizens can have cloud hooks. And you literally can't open doors without it,
yeah.
right? Like, you are so considered alien, so disregarded by Texcalani society, that without this thing that marks you, without this technology that connects you to the AI that runs the city and all these different things, you aren't a person, right? And so identity and technology get so blurry in all these different directions at the same time, which I think is such a fascinating way to build out this world.
So I just want to share with you the language that she uses the first time she introduces the cloud hook. Over her left eye, she wore a cloud hook, a glass eyepiece full of the ceaseless, obscuring flow of the Imperial Information Network. And that ceaseless, obscuring flow mm-hmm. does so much beautiful lifting. And this is a really good example of using point of view for Mahit's experience of what that's like. Ceaseless. And it's echoing back to that ceaseless,
right.
at the beginning, that opening line, ceaseless obscuring flow and Imperial Information Network. It is an impersonal thing. It is something that is part of connecting you and making you even more of a cog in the empire versus what she carries, which is the Imago, which is a person and their experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are not ceaseless. We need a quick lacuna for a thing of the week.
Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
I love watching documentaries because I think they tell us so much about the world around us that we can then use in the world building that we're doing when we're building new things. And so I'm recommending the documentary series Rotten, which is this deep dive into the food supply chain on Netflix. Each episode focuses on a different food. There's garlic, there's chocolate, there's avocado. And just in general, I always recommend watching documentaries and think about how does their world work? How do their systems work? And then how can you just basically steal from that, from the thing that you're writing next? In particular, I love the avocado production episode of this particular series. And it really made me think about how changing complexity or changing the demand for a technology or magic or a food in one area can affect something somewhere completely across the world. So check that out. It is Rotten on Netflix.
Welcome back. Let's talk about how you as writers can use some of these concepts we've talked about as tools in your own work. Because who are you? And what does technology mean are questions that have been at the root of mm-hmm. science fiction since its very inception.
Well, there's such like a big difference between gee whiz, what cool technology, and introducing technology that is closely tied to and integrated with character and theme, right? And so you know, the Imago ties so closely to who Mahit is as a person. And then, you know, as Mary Redmond was talking about before the break, how the cloud hook connects to the thematic ideas of what makes up an empire, right? And so when you're thinking about what technologies do I want to introduce into my world, think not only about how do they affect material things in the space, but also what are you trying to communicate with your book? What are the important thematics and how does the technology speak to that?
Yeah, and you took the words right out of my mouth, but I've got new ones, which is that I think also it's about perspective on technology, thinking about that ceaselessness. The voice in the head, the Imago is also ceaseless, but Mahit would never see it that way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one thing to think about is that not everyone in your story will have the same perspective on the same technology. Something that could be a cool exercise, for example, would be to look at one big piece of technology in your world and how do three different people from three different points in your story or three different perspectives view that technology? How would they describe it? And that gives you a better sort of 360 view of what it is beyond just what it does.
Well, and then we see the empire's idea of what you could do with an Imago, which is this sort of extractive and, you know, way of extending their power of like, oh, this could be a way for us to live forever. It's not about honoring your heritage, not about connecting with your ancestors. It's about hijacking future generations, right? Yeah. And so, you know, again, we see this perversion of the technology, and we've lived in Mahit's head long enough by the time we discover that we understand how horrifying this concept is and why, you know, and also what deals Iskander made to get to the point to protect his station, how far he was willing to go to protect his culture, but what does it mean if they give up the core thing that makes them them?
We've talked a lot over the last 15 years, how long have we been doing this, about the importance of extrapolation of whatever your cool idea is. One of the things that's really challenging for us in many cases is to accurately or at least effectively imagine what life would be like with a thing. And as I was thinking about the Imago, I realized that I had an analog in my own life. Every book that I have read and loved enough to reread has become a set of voices in my head that affect how I answer certain kinds of questions. It may shape the phrasing. It may shape the way I think about the problem. It may shape my opinion outright, you know, leaning me in one direction or another. Books, and this is why some people find them so scary, books create biases. Mm-hmm. And so for me as a writer, I am able to look at Imago technology and say, maybe this is like reading the same book 100 times so that is now a voice in my head. And now I have that in my toolbox as a way to think about this. Mm-hmm.
I recently reread last year Ursula K. Le Guin's Left-Handed Darkness and had this experience of, I don't know whether I read it at such a formative age that, you know, that book imprinted on me, so I now think the same things, or if I love that book because I thought this way and then I read the book. I don't know where I end and the book begins, and that is such a wonderful experience to have with a work that means something to you. And how, again, I don't know whether she shaped my worldview or I found something that just so perfectly matches how I see things. And, you know, I think that's such a great experience that we can have with art and in this way and, you know, with the stories that we live with and the cultures that we come up with. And again, like the Imago is a reflection of that in really interesting ways.
Yeah. One of the things that she says when she early in the book, he behaved exactly like an Imago ought to behave, a repository of instinctive and automatic skill that Mahit hadn't had time to acquire for herself. I'm like, yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I would love having that in my life. And I think that that's, again, one of the world-building things that she's doing with this is that she is tying, to make this comfortable for us, she is using familiar experiences that, you know, uncomfortable situations that we've been in. It's like, yeah, I would love to have that. And that's one of the ways that she makes this technology feel familiar to us is by tying it to familiar experiences that we have had. You know, he knew when to duck through doorways. that were built for people who were shorter than she was. It's like, that's, you know, that kind of instinctiveness of which fork do I use? I don't know. And where you quietly watch the people around you. If you've just got someone in the back of your head who just, you can just like, will you take it right now? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And the loss of that, I think. Yeah. Like that's there's a phrase that I've been seeing more and more online. We're losing recipes, which is the, you know, the theory that like cultural things are not being passed down to new generations. And the idea that you can like lose those recipes when you lose, you know, with the imago's not working or if it's lost or corrupted is, I think that's something for me that felt really resonant. And therefore I felt, I was like, yes, this technology could prevent something that I can see as something that could happen in the real world.
Mm-hmm. One of the critical story points, spoiler alert, but guys, you've had a month. Please, we can't say enough about how much you need to read this beautiful book. One of the critical story points is that Mahit's imago is 15 years out of date. Yeah. And so the person, the voice that she has in her head is not the person who, you know, died on the job that she's going out to replace. He is the person who might, under one set of circumstances, become that person. Mm. And later in the story, she gets both of them in her head. And I love that, I love that fulfillment of the promise in that this is not something that the LaSalle ever would have done. They would have seen this as just awful. No, don't do that. It's dangerous. It'll make you sick. And also it's immoral. There are probably taboos against it. Of necessity, she does it. And you have three people in one brain at once. A young version and an old version of the same person arguing with one another as arbitrated by the person whose body they're in.
On a technical level, I think one thing that Arkady does that is such a great example is you can take one core idea, right? What if you had connection to information and then instantiate it in the imago and then keep pushing on that idea over the course of the book, finding new iterations? Okay, what if it's outside your body, the cloud hook? What if it breaks and then you have the first, you know, issue with Iskander? What if you had two of them and then, you know, later in the book, you know, and just it really is one idea that carries through the whole book that she keeps fiddling with.
Yeah. Well, and there's also a point deeper in the book where she talks about imago technology as it appears in bad daytime drama, where, you know, someone's has taken the imago of their lover and carries it around with them, but their personalities aren't compatible. And so, you know, so that they fracture and then they're both lost. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly what we as writers would do. And she's like, yeah, this is an idea that as a writer would have, but a society can't sustain that. So it's not the way society works. You know, the imago who shows up to the widow, to their widow. And it's like, oh yeah, no, that's really messed up.
That's
horribly
inappropriate. No,
completely inappropriate. And so that is, I think, something that can be fun for you when you're doing your world building is to think about how the storytellers in your world are thinking about the technology that you have, or the G-Wiz, the magic, whatever it is. Like, how do people who fundamentally don't understand how it works describe it to other people?
The meta gets so thick when you begin considering that much science fiction is cautionary. You know, we should avoid going down this route. But in your cautionary tale, you're talking about this technology. Are there cautionary tales in that universe that these people didn't pay attention to? Oh, no.
And I love that those are all facets, like Donovan was saying, of the same idea. I remember being cautioned once when earlier in my sort of writing life about just throwing something new in. When you feel like you've run out of ideas or you feel like you've run out of plot, you'll think, I'll add something even more to the world. Like, not only is there an imago, but there's zombies. I don't know, something that will add the drama, but actually the truer, more resonant drama is often in seeing how the same thing can be viewed differently, can cause new complications, can create its own stories, you know, can create its own problems and recipes. And I think that is really where world building becomes so rich and multifaceted.
Yeah, it's interesting going wide and going deep, right? Yeah. Her world blending is wide because you get a sense of all these things, but she communicates that wideness primarily by digging really deep into certain specific channels, right? This technology, the way the poetry works, the way names work. You know, she picks these specific lanes and then just digs and digs and digs until, you know, oil is down there, right? Like, and it's really thrilling to watch.
One of the tools that, as we wrap up, one of the tools that you've got in your toolbox already is asking yourself, and what happens when it goes wrong?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the technology fails, when the technology is abused, when the protections slip? One of the most terrifying movie moments for young me was RoboCop, when Ed 209 says, "You have 15 seconds to comply." The guy drops the gun. And then Ed 209 says, "You have 10 seconds to comply." And you realize, oh, that robot's not working right. Yeah. Oh, a very, very bad thing is going to happen.
Yeah.
Let's wrap this up with some homework for you. I want you to think about, do some brainstorming, some spitballing, come up with three technological or magical approaches that would raise questions about what it means to be you, about what it means to be an individual, about, I mean, you can be talking about, you know, a soul or a whatever. Three examples, and then take one of those and have two characters write a scene where two characters argue about it.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses, now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.